I want to talk first about a woman, and I grew up in the 70s, and my parents bought a Guinness Book of World Records. They were big back then, and I went through that and read every record probably there was in there over and over and over. And there was a picture of a lady, and it was probably the early 1900s. She's walking down the street of probably Manhattan, New York, with this black dress on, black veil, and she held a world record. First off, she was the first millionaire woman in the United States ever, and she died in 1916, but the record she held, which is kind of subjective, I guess, was she was considered the most miserly person that ever lived. And she was, when you read her story, her nickname was the Witch of Wall Street, which tells you she, considering who works in Wall Street, she had to have been something else. But she was so tight with money that in her closet, she had a nightgown and she had a black dress and her black undergarments. And she wore those until they literally rotted off of her body. And then she would buy another set and wear those the same way. She would not, I guess hygiene was not a big thing. She would shower very rarely and never with hot water because that wastes money. She ate her oatmeal. It was cold. And she wouldn't even use a radiator to heat it. She wouldn't keep her place warm. New York City back then, miserable. Her son had a slight infection in his leg, and she took him in, and they were going to do a procedure that would take care of him, and it was $24, and she said, absolutely not. They took him home, and he had to have his leg amputated after that. So was she that miserly? It sounds like someone that would not be your best friend. But she goes down as the most miserly. She also went down as probably the most unhappy person in the country at that time. She had no friends. She didn't want friends, for one thing. She had no friends. None of her relatives had anything to do with her. And yet occasionally you would hear these stories where she would donate something but never would let anyone know about it. But for the most part, they considered her the most unhappy person in the United States. It kind of reminds me of a guy that used to work on job sites with. He would clean up around these job sites, and he just looked hateful. I mean, just absolutely miserable. No one ever talked to him. And I mean, just absolutely looked like someone that would jump down your throat. And so one time I thought, well, I'll just say something to him. And he was older. He was probably 75, working, you know, doing what he could out there. And I said, how you doing today? And he glared at me and he said, I'm old, blank, blank. I feel like blank. And that was it. I thought, well, I won't ever ask him again. I learned my lesson on that. So he was obviously just not a happy person. But there are some characteristics about happiness, and we're going to look at it because Rob talked about in the school system. Man, these kids, if they're not happy 24/7, they're in counseling. They're in guidance counselors. Happiness is everything to them. But in the Bible, as we see, that happiness isn't everything. Yes, it's good to be happy, but there are times when there are other emotions that God put in us. But the first thing I'd like to look at is a woman named Paula Laws. She wrote an article titled 15 Habits of Highly Not Successful, Highly Miserable People. And she looked at 15 different aspects. Number one, they're never thankful for anything. And think about some people that you may know that certainly fit a few of these. Number two, they live a very unadventurous life. Number three, they live in and glorify the past. I got a lot of friends, man, that were great high school football players. We could have been in NFL. They're still there. They're 55 and they're still there. They live in and glorify the past. They do everything for personal gain. They are afraid of economic loss. Number six, you see a lot of these people. They love to pick fights with people. They blame others and play the victim. They think people's intentions toward them are always dishonorable. Someone's always out to cheat them. Number nine, they give themselves a negative identity and revel in that. I fight with that sometimes. Kids call me a grumpy old man at school, and I kind of like, yeah, you leave me alone that way. So I have to fight that one. Number 10, they get involved in others' drama. That's always fun when we have those people that do that. Number 11, they always expect the worst. Number 12, they focus only on themselves. There's your narcissism. Number 13, they are critical of everything. We all know somebody that can pick everything that's wrong with you. They're critical of everything. Number 14, they worry too much. And number 15, they are envious of other people's success. So I think all of these, if you had all of these attributes, you would be a fairly miserable person at this point. When the United States sent the Declaration of Independence to Britain to declare that, hey, we're going out on our own, they had a... There's a sentence in there that we all know. It's very famous. It says, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." But that's not the original quote. The original quote came from a guy named John Locke, and it was life, liberty, and property. And actually, believe it or not, Thomas Jefferson's the one that changed this, because he thought property kind of narrowed it down and the pursuit of happiness meant something broader. So they changed it. But in our original document, we have the pursuit of happiness. Now, what exactly is happiness? We think we want it. We think we know what it is. But according to Webster's, it's a state of well-being and contentment. So it's peace. It's you're calm, you're just, I see these back here, hope, peace, joy, and love. I mean, Christmas time, but that's all related to happiness at this point. But how do we find happiness? How do we find happiness? Because we had someone that was more talented than anyone that ever lived, I think, according to the Bible, that no matter what he did, he couldn't find happiness. So can we find happiness through wisdom and knowledge? Just because we are the brightest, smartest person in the room. Everybody likes to see that. Yeah. I'll make fun of Caleb Green with this doctorate right now, but I won't do that. So, but there are people that is their goal, to be the smartest person in the room. And I say that about Caleb because I know Jacob, my oldest son, he was always mad at Caleb, Morgan, and Nathaniel, because they're brilliant. So I have to dig at him occasionally because Jacob's not here, so I had to do that. But these guys are brilliant, but you won't know it because they're not out here saying, "I'm the smartest one in the world." And we know those people. Those are the people that aren't like that. Those are people that aren't like that at all, but they think they're the smartest ones. But let's look at someone who was, and as he reflected on his life, he realized that some of the stuff that we see as success is not necessarily right. Let's look at Ecclesiastes as we look at Solomon. As we look at Solomon, reflecting on his life, because this guy had it all. He had more than probably any person ever as far as for his time period. Ecclesiastes 1, verse 13. We'll start there. Help if I open my Bible, sorry. Ecclesiastes 1, verse 13, it says, "And I set my heart to seek and search out by wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven. This burdensome task God has given to the sons of man by which they may be exercised." Search out by wisdom everything. So he's wiser than anyone ever, but he's looking at everything that God has created. Probably had ideas that even our top scientists today can't comprehend. Let's go on down to verse 16. It said, "I communed with my heart, saying, look, I have attained greatness and have gained more wisdom than all who were before me in Jerusalem. My heart has understood great wisdom and knowledge. And I set my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this also is grasping for the wind." And then finally, verse 18. "For in much wisdom is much grief, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow." So he's just warning people that just because we learn something doesn't mean that we're necessarily going to be even better off, because it complicates things. Think about what we know that no other people in history know. And I'd say without a doubt, we're probably the most knowledgeable people that ever existed, and yet might be the most miserable. I remember there was a man that used to know my parents, and he said, if you want to make someone miserable, give them too much. And whether we think we have it or not, we have more than anyone that's ever lived. Our poorest are so much wealthier than anyone in history that it's terrible. Right now, because of our knowledge, we have 25,000 nuclear weapons on Earth. Destroy the planet many, many times over. No time in history, except the last 50 years or so, has that happened. We have foods now that can be stored for years and years and years because scientists have learned how to use preservatives. Now, it increases sorrow on the other side. Look at our cancer rates with the foods that we eat and stuff, the cancer rates with that. Some claim, oh, it has nothing to do with it, but you look at the statistics, they just fit. They just fit. But we have more knowledge. We've learned how to do things, but there, like Solomon said, there are sorrows that come with that. Also, does wealth bring happiness? And I'll look at some stuff in a few minutes. And when I'm talking wealth at this point, what they were looking at were people not wealthy, like we would think of. They're looking at the $100 million dollar range and higher as wealthy when I look at these in a few minutes. So just keep that in mind that those are numbers we don't really comprehend, but this is the where they were looking at this. But does wealth bring happiness? Solomon, again, might have been the wealthiest man that ever lived, given his time frame. He talks about that. Let's go over to Ecclesiastes 2. We're going to read a little bit here. We'll read verses 4 through 11. It talks about what he actually accomplished. He had the money. And again, he had the knowledge, so he's able to accomplish things that very few people ever existed could. Ecclesiastes 2, verse 4 said, "I made my works great. I built myself houses, planted myself vineyards. I made myself gardens and orchards, and I planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made myself water pools from which to water the growing trees of the grove. I acquired male and female servants and had servants born in my house. Yes, I had greater possessions of herds and flocks than all who were in Jerusalem before me. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the special treasures of kings and of the provinces. I acquired male and female singers, the delights of the sons of men, and musical instruments of all kinds." He had everything physically. If you look at this, he had everything you could possibly want. Anything you want, the greatest singer in the world to come up here? Okay, no problem. Call him up. They now work for you. You want the greatest structure ever built? Okay, not a problem. Let's get guys on it. Had every physical thing that you could possibly have. Verse 9. So I became great and excelled more than all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom remained with me. And I wonder sometimes when Solomon, you know, when God gave him wisdom because he asked for it, did it become a curse to him? And it certainly seems like it could have, because you're so wise that maybe you don't rely on God as much. Verse 10, whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my reward from all my labor. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had done and on the labor in which I had toiled. All of this that he had done, he had created all of this. And what does he say about it here? He said, indeed, all was vanity and grasping for the wind. There was no profit under the sun. Everything that he had, and he realized it was all just like a vanity. It was all just something that meant nothing. Smartest man in the world, had more than everyone else. And at the end, he realized it really amounted to nothing. Something that was strange when I looked at this, and this is that wealthy 100 million and above, is that, were you aware that the extremely wealthy have a much lower divorce rate than average Americans? And you think, well, that's possible, but it's also different. They're happy because they're wealthy, or something like that. But what they found out was there's a totally different reason that they're happy. When they interviewed these people, and they found out these were anonymous surveys that they did, over half of the women were having affairs outside of marriage, and two-thirds of the men were having affairs outside of marriage. So why the lower divorce rate? Because most of them simply said they did not want to split the assets. Let's divide that up. More important to keep those assets together. I don't know if that's happiness or not. I don't know if that's happiness. But to think that divorce rates are lower, you would think because they get along. But then you realize, hey, they just don't want to divide up that money. That's really kind of sad. So what should we look towards? Because we think, okay, if I'm brilliant, if I have everything, you know, physically, I'm wealthy, I should have happiness. But we just saw this example. Probably the most knowledgeable person ever, maybe the most wealthy for the time period. And you see that everything that he had, he says, hey, it's nothing. What should we look towards? Let's look at that. Let's look at a few points that we'll find us happiness, that will allow us to have that time. The first one, obvious, and we pound on it every week, you should hear about it, but build a relationship with God. Very simple. You know, it's the same thing said over and over. But the first one, build our relationship with God. Let's look at a quick verse for that. Proverbs 16, verse 20. It says right here what causes happiness. Proverbs 16, verse 20. It says, he who heeds the word wisely will find good. And second half of this verse, very important. And whoever trusts in the Lord, happy is he. There's your happiness. So why would this make you happy? Build your relationship with God. But some of those miserable traits that we looked at a few minutes ago, you're focused on yourself. And if you're focused on what God wants you to do, number one, you're focused on outward things. You're not focused on me, me, me. But you also build that faith that we know. Because faith for us is everything. Without faith, why are we here? Because we don't see God. We don't see him. We have to rely that he's there. It's that faith. You're building that. And as we build that, God's Holy Spirit, all of the fruits of the Holy Spirit, will be stronger in us. And think about it. Joy. Which one? Joy back here. Joy is a fruit of the Spirit. When do we find ourselves unhappy? When are we mostly unhappy? I know when things happen to us, you know, that we can't control. But a lot of the times, it's when that relationship's not there. All right, we don't get our Bible study and we don't get the prayer that we're supposed to. We're focusing on job, whatever it is. And that's when we do find ourselves typically unhappy, because we're pulling away from that. The second one to me, and for the kids at school, to me, it's, I can't say it in a biblical sense, but I just want to tell them this. Realize you will not be happy all the time. Realize you will not be happy all of the time. And think about the ones that are addicted to whatever drugs there are out there. Why are they taking those? Yes, they're addicted, but what are they getting? They're trying to get this happiness, this joy. What is that? Endorphin rush, whatever it is. Whatever it is that causes you to be on this high area. They're always looking for that. But that's not what God built us to be. God didn't build us to be up here all of the time. If he did, he wouldn't have given us these other emotions. And these other emotions, sometimes they hurt, but you think about someone, again, even though we build that relationship, let's say we have that, point one, we have that relationship with God. Does that guarantee us constant happiness? Does that guarantee us constant happiness? All you have to do is go to Job. Again, Job, most righteous man on earth, and look what he went through. You don't stay up here on the happiness level going through what Job did. You can't. And Solomon, again, Solomon had it all, but it's quite obvious Solomon had some real issues, I guess you'd say. Solomon had some times down here. Even think in the Bible about Saul. I don't know what was going on with Saul, but he would go into those depression times where, you know, David had to go in and play music when he was younger for him. So there are these built in to humans, these emotions that we have. And Solomon, quite honestly, talked about it. Let's look at that. Because the birds had that song, Turn, 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 right? Was it the birds first? Mr. Bittner, you would know that one. But Turn, 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 and it's using these biblical verses. Let's look at Ecclesiastes 3. And we'll look at verses 1 through 8. Because as Solomon reflected on his life, he realized there is a time for every emotion. Everything that we have, there is a time for it. God put those in there. We didn't just genetically change and get those as human beings. They were there, these emotions. Verse 1, it says, to everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven. And then verse 2, we start looking at the different traits or things that are going to happen to us. There's a time to be born and a time to die. Again, I think about that, and you think about when we lose people, and man, it hurts so much when that happens. But how much easier it is for them. It's harder for us, but they don't have to fight this mess. You know, think about some of the family members that have died in here, because I think about my dad and what he would think about some of this stuff that's going on in the world. He wouldn't even comprehend it. And yet he doesn't have to face this like we do and fight the acceptance that this world has to this stuff anymore. And a time to die. To me, I can't imagine wanting to live on and on and on, watch your children die, watch your grandchildren. That's not the way it's supposed to be. You know, husband and wife, like it or not, unless you're very fortunate, one of them is going to die before the other. And it hurts. It hurts the one that's here more. But it's a time to die. God set these in motion. They don't have to fight anymore. Their fight's over. As we say, most of them, I believe, are sealed because they fought the good fight that Paul talks about. There's a time to plant and a time to pluck what is planted. It's a time to do all of this. Right now we're going nuts because we're trying to deer hunt, and my neighbor will not harvest his corn yet so we can deer hunt. So I want to tell him there's a time to pluck what's planted. But there's a time for everything. A time for everything. Number three, or verse three, a time to kill and a time to heal. A time to kill and a time to heal. Look at this. I'm sorry. I've got another one here, though. Another sermon that was different. When we think of killing, because we know in the Bible, we know it's a little bit of a mistranslation as far as murder, because God did order some people killing. But killing in this sense, going back to God's laws with the Israelites, there were offenses that, quite frankly, in the Old Testament required the death penalty. And there were times when God commanded that people be killed. Look at the Amalekites. God ordered that they completely wipe out not just the people, every animal that they had, everything. Now, for us as humans, doesn't seem fair, but go out tonight and look at those stars and think we see them, and yet we can't comprehend. All we can do is send some little probe out to get to what, Mars, about as far as we could go. How can we question the person who built everything in this world, or not person, the entity, our God, that created all of this, and yet say, well, I disagree with there's a time to kill? Hey, God says there's a time for everything. A time to break down and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. Shoot, my wife's in here. I hate dancing. I wish I'd have skipped that, but I didn't. She'll use that on me later. But there's a time for every emotion that we feel. There's not, and I remember one of my favorite movies, it shouldn't have been, was Rocky IV, where he fought Ivan Drago, this Russian that had no emotion, never made any emotion. And I remember anytime I play sports, I think I want to be like that guy. But it was just this always no emotion of any kind. That's not what God built us for. He built us to experience all of this stuff. Verse 5, a time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones. And again, let me go back to that other one because there was some commentary on this one. This was meant as removing from their gardens, but also in their commentary they mention this is a time when we may have to put stones, being people that are keeping us down, sins, whatever it is, to put them away from us for a while, to cast them out. But then as it says also, that it looks like it also means there are times when, okay, that person's doing the best they can, that you bring those people back. But there's a time to cast away, there's a time to gather. And for all of these things, so many emotions, so many different aspects to just these verses is very, very deep when you think of it. A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. Again, that fits that same scenario. There's times when someone's struggling, you've got to be there. But then there's times when someone's struggling in a wrong way and you have to tell them you've got to get it together. You know, they have to get it together. Verse 6, a time to gain and a time to lose. A time to keep and a time to throw away. There's a time when financially there's a time to gain, but there's also a time when you need to help other people with that. You don't be like Miss Hetty Green and just hoard it to the point of your son's leg is amputated. But there's a time to help, and there's a time to, hey, gather up for your cold winters that you have. We know we should help those with need, but also we don't give it away all the time, because it says there's a time to keep. 2 Thessalonians 3, verse 10 mentions that you don't help those who aren't going to help themselves. You know, you've just created someone that relies on someone else. That's also, God gave us hands and he wanted us to work the land. He wanted us to be productive. You know, all of this stuff God gave us. God gave us all of this ability. He gave us all of these emotions to experience. And it would be very frustrating if you were just on that even keel all of the time without having that. Because it's like a release. Think of a valve on something that you have to release. You have to release that sometimes, whatever emotion it is. If you have something, we used to have a heavy punching bag my dad put in a barn. You could go out there and take some frustrations out, you know, stuff like that. There's a time to release some of that energy. It's not that even keel. Still verse 7, a time to keep and a time to throw away. Again, the same as casting stones, all of that. Verse 7, a time to tear and a time to sow. A time to keep silence and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. And we always hear you shouldn't hate anything, but there's a time to hate. What should we hate? Well, Proverbs 6 says what we should hate. You know, it tells us, what does God hate? The abomination. What are the things that God hates? It's what we're supposed to be hating. There's a time for war. There's a time for war. You read Revelation, there has to be a war to end all of this other garbage that we had. All of this. And yet we look at where war has gone. And World War I had a very interesting nickname. Does anyone know what World War I was called? War to End All Wars. That was so bad that they couldn't get any worse than that. And then 30 years later, we get World War II, where it's unbelievably horrific. If we had a World War today, those would look like little pea shooters if it got serious today compared to what it is. But there's a time for war, and it does say in Revelation that it has to happen before it's over. There's a time for happiness just like every other emotion. Had God wanted us to only experience joy and happiness, he would have created us that way. Our kids at school right now are obsessed with two things, and those are cell phones. If you don't have what's the latest one? I don't know, 16, whatever it is, you get made fun of. And now it's come back. I had hoped it had gone away, but when they buy their tennis shoes, you can't have a crease in the top of them. So they walk around this goofy looking walk like this so they don't crease their shoes. And I've actually had to send a kid to guidance counselor last year because their parents bought them a new Samsung phone right after Christmas, and the other kids made fun of them, so they had to go to a guidance counselor. And I had to send one to the office because they're not allowed to have their phones out because they had to call their parents because one of his shoes got creased and didn't know how to fun. And this is where I'd tell him, hey, you need to toughen up and get over it. And I know someday I'll get in trouble for that. It's just where we're headed. But there's a time for these things other than happiness. You can't be happy your entire life. The third point that will help us find happiness is do for others. Very simple. Do for others. Proverbs 22:9 talks of this. Do for others. Proverbs 22:9 says, "He who has a generous eye will be blessed, for he gives of his bread to the poor." He has a generous eye will be blessed, for he gives of his bread to the poor. Doing for others. Everyone knows who Dave Ramsey is, and I'm not a huge Dave Ramsey fan, only for one reason, and that's because he tends to call it his ministry. And I don't like when ministries make millions and millions of dollars. Don't call it your ministry, okay? It's your business. But other than that, you know, it's principle. How can you argue? Most of them are biblical. I just don't like the fact that you call it your ministry with that. But he did talk once about happiness. And I remember I was driving somewhere and talking about how not to be depressed when you're struggling. And he said, go find a second job. If that's not enough, go find a third job. You work till you're utterly exhausted and you're way too tired to ever be depressed because you're focusing on something else. I mean, he's right from a sense. We sit here and say, woe is me. All it does is build up. But if you put others first, then that's where true happiness is. And I remember giving a sermon at about a little girl. Her name was Maddie something, and I don't remember. This is not on the notes, but she had some very serious cancer issues, and she was in a hospital, never went home, I don't think. But the first thing she did in the hospital was notice some of these other kids that were just sitting in bed without anything. So she started, I don't know if it was knitting or putting something together and giving all these other little kids toys. And it raised their spirits. And as she got sicker and sicker, and it was, I mean, she did die when she was 16, I think. She had gone so far as, and here's a little girl who, I mean, if you're in stage 4 or whatever cancer at that point, it's impressive. But her rest of her life before she died was getting people to build whatever little toys it was now. I don't remember what it was. But all around the country. And they were given to all the children's hospitals. And sorry, but when you put your mind on other people, that's where you're not focused on yourself. That little girl never focused on herself. It was on other people. And, I mean, for her, I don't know if she was happy. I'm sure she was hurting. But she did it for other people. You could tell her, she wasn't, woe is me. How fair is this to me? She helped other people with that. Number 4 is, our time on earth is finite, so be happy. Our time on earth, we're not here that long, not long enough to just be miserable all the time. How many have seen The Green Mile, the movie? You know, Stephen King, and yeah, it's extra supernatural and all that. But at the end, what, the guy's 160-something years old, and he talks about how miserable he is because everyone he loves dies. And he talks that he's miserable at that point. Do you want to spend these years that we have, 70, 80, 90, whatever we have, being miserable or being happy? I mean, it's our choice most of the time. And there's a study out of University of Pittsburgh that looked at women with a disease or an illness. And I'm not sure what illness that was. I don't have it here. But women that had a positive outlook had a 19% less chance of dying from that illness, all because of their outlook on life. 19%, that's 20%. You'll take that if that's the way it is. But make the choice to be happy. Make the choice to be happy. On that note of women being happy, there was a woman whose husband died, and they're from the South, so they did it the normal way and had the wake in the living room. And her husband made her absolutely miserable. I mean, mistreated her whole life. They have the wake. They take the casket out through the front gate. They hit the front gate, and boom, somehow he wakes up in the casket. Lives another 10 years, made her life absolutely miserable still. And he dies before her. Once again, they have the wake. As they get ready to leave, she calls her two boys over and say, "Hey, I need you to move those two fence posts there. He's not going to hit that gate again." So. But it's your choice to be happy, right? It's your choice to be happy. Let's look at Proverbs 29. Proverbs 29. Proverbs 29, verse 18. So we can find so much in Proverbs and Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes seems a woe is me, but it's an incredible lesson that we can learn. Proverbs 29, verse 18 says, "Where there is no revelation, the people cast off restraint." It's where we are right now. People don't understand what they're doing wrong, and this world's turning wacko, if you will. But the second part of the verse tells you, "But happy is he who keeps the law." We keep the law of God. That's where you find that happiness. Again, all the time? No, that's not what God expected of us. But we do find that happiness that God put there. And let's turn to final scripture here. Matthew 22 makes it very simple what we need to do. And I've gone to this, I think, the last two sermons. Because I think if you break everything down in the world, this is what it comes down to. Matthew 22, verses 37 through 39. It takes all those points that I just had and put them all right here together. It's in the Old Testament, it's in the New Testament. Matthew 22, verse 37 through 39. Jesus said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind." Again, you're focused on that. You're not focused on woe is me. Verse 38, "This is the first and great commandment. And the second's just like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself." You're more worried like that little girl that was creating stuff for other sick little children. You're more worried about other people than you are yourself. That's what these two commandments come down to. Everything that we've looked at comes down to these two: God and other people. Otherwise, why did Christ even come back? Because he came back to hammer that second one in to people, that we should be loving our neighbors. We don't like what they do, but we're supposed to love them. You know, so if you break it down to this, these two things, if we follow God, we help each other, and we take the focus off of me, 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 we take it off ourselves, then we truly will find happiness.